Welcome to Focus, a public affairs program of the Christian Broadcasting System. I'm your host, John Wells, and in studio with us, Janet Green, diagnosed with Parkinson's how many years ago now?
Two and a half years ago.
And Dr. John Sleven, neurologist at UK. Doctor, good to have you with us, even though I butchered your name. Well, Janet, first of all, you really had a difficult time, as anyone would, I would think, in accepting and coming to grips with the diagnosis.
It was a shock, and Dr. Sleven can attest to that. One of the things that he said to me after he announced that I had Parkinson's, he turned in his chair away from me and documented some things in a chart and then turned back around, and I'm still sitting there kind of unchanged, and he said, "This is not the typical reaction that I get when I tell someone that they have Parkinson's." But I was really just so stunned and completely unprepared to hear it.
We'll detail more about Parkinson's and the actual disease and its effects, but you've actually been able to actually slow the progression, you feel, of the disease.
Well, exercise is one of the choices that every person with Parkinson's can begin to incorporate into their daily regimen. I already was exercising, so it wasn't a big leap for me, but then I began to find that it was one of the things that we can do that seemingly slows the progression of the disease. It certainly has kept me in good health, and I don't deal with a lot of the symptoms that are typical for many people facing this, and I believe that's a result of the attitude that I have, the faith that I have, and the alternative therapy choices that I'm making, with one of those being exercise.
And also food?
Certainly, nutrition. I eat better than I ever had. I'm much more aware, although I seem to be craving sugar, but I think that's also a component of Parkinson's. At least I like to say that it is.
There you go. And Dr. Sleven, give us an idea of some of the initial symptoms of Parkinson's. Do they vary quite a bit?
The typical motor symptoms of Parkinson's disease are tremor, which I think everyone's aware of. And it's a particular kind of tremor, resting tremor, so that if your hands are, say, sitting in your lap, they'll be tremorous. You lift them or you move to grab a cup or something and it'll quiet. Hmm. You lay them back, set them back in your lap, and then after a few seconds, it'll come back again. That's the tremor. The second is what's called bradykinesia, or slowness of movement, so that it becomes difficult to execute activities quickly. You'll find that brush your teeth slower, comb your hair more slowly, get dressed more slowly, have difficulty with the buttons that maybe you didn't before. That's bradykinesia. The third is rigidity, and that's a stiffness that comes along with it but is not part of bradykinesia. And the stiffness also adds to a reduced motor function and ability to move arms, legs, and the like. So those three, tremor, rigidity, and bradykinesia, are the hallmarks of motor dysfunction in Parkinson's, of Parkinsonism, I guess.
Right.
And the reason I say that is that Parkinsonism is a symptom complex. There are many different diseases that can actually cause that, in addition to what we're calling Parkinson's, but what physicians call idiopathic Parkinson's disease. Idiopathic means we don't know the cause. Okay, so for example, there are certain medications that if you take them, we know will cause those symptoms. But that's not idiopathic Parkinson's disease. You stop the medicines, it goes away. Likewise, there are several so-called Parkinson plus syndromes that have those symptoms plus other unusual things that distinguish and differentiate them from idiopathic Parkinson's disease. So already in 5 minutes, I've made this way more complicated than you wanted.
No.
But there are these differences.
Right. Now, is it true that there can be much before you see any other symptoms, even maybe something like a loss of smell?
You've done your homework.
That's part of my job.
A lot of work over the last 10 years, certainly 5 years, has begun to look at some of these non-motor aspects. As we've become better at controlling motor dysfunction, these have come to the forefront, or maybe they've always been there and doctors were just not smart enough to ask about them, these other problems. And smell is one that may diminish for years before these overt motor symptoms come. Smell, not so much. Frankly, that's also been looked at in context of Alzheimer's disease and other neurodegenerative illnesses. But one that does seem to be consistent with idiopathic Parkinson's disease is constipation.
Right.
Patients will complain maybe 10, 12 years before they have the obvious motor manifestations that they have gradually progressive problems with constipation.
And typically a symptom like that, you don't think of something like Parkinson's. That's kind of a stretch in terms of a prognosis or potential progression.
Sure. I mean, that's a relatively generic. It's, you know, what things cause constipation? What things cause headache? You know, you
right.
start to get into that kind of problem.
I want to let people know who we're talking to again. Janet Green, diagnosed 2.5 years ago with Parkinson's, and Dr. John Slevin, neurologist at UK. I think I got the name right. But Dr. Slevin, research into Parkinson's, how would you categorize it in recent years? Has it really ramped up and seen some fruit, maybe?
And the research front is very active. Again, a little historically, some historical comments. Parkinson's disease was named after James Parkinson, who described it in a monograph in 1817.
Wow.
There are cases in retrospect wherein patients gave descriptions that are straight on of Parkinson's disease. So it's been around for a long time. For the first 100 years, 75 years, not much was done. The first treatment that actually helped tremor came out in 1880s, 1890s. About 1950 or so, we became aware that dopamine was a principal player. It's a neurotransmitter in the brain that is released, and we found, by dopamine neurons in a particular area of the brain that we know die off and lead to the motor symptom complex I mentioned earlier. That was in the 50s. By the 60s, that became known. The first trials for Sinemet, carbidopa levodopa, were in fact conducted in the late 60s, early 70s. And then subsequently, other medications were tested and brought on board. More in the last 20 years, a lot has been done to try to uncover the underlying pathophysiology and etiology. There are probably more clinical trials around the world currently being undertaken, both looking at a variety of different medications that affect not only dopamine and dopamine neurotransmission and those cells that die, but other areas we know now are affected in the brain as well, in addition to clinical trials with various medications attacking those different areas than has ever been before. So right now it is very active. Patients often frustrated because they don't see things coming out quickly enough, of course, because they have the illness. But I have to tell them, in fact, more is going on now than ever before.
And Janet, we mentioned diet earlier and exercise and that sort of thing. So, and Dr. Slevin could, I'm sure, really reinforce this, but you're seeing not only genetic components of the disease, you know, it looks like, but also organic components.
Very much so, in fact. But that's how it is for all of us. You know, I've talked with Dr. Slevin, and in my capacity with the work that I'm doing now, I'm interacting with neurologists from all over. And when I ask for them to provide me with maybe a 1, 2, 3 that I can offer patients and families facing this disease, the answer is the same as it would be for you. And that is exercise, improved quality of nutrition, and rest. And so the message is the same. The foods are basically the same, you know, high in vegetables and fruits. Limit the sugars, limit the proteins, and eat a pure food. I eat organic foods and farmers market foods because of the question mark of pesticides and toxicities in the body and in the foods that we're ingesting.
And you're mentioning rest, and that's a component of stress, and people need to deal with it through means other than sleep, of course, but I guess finding ways to work that out in your own emotional makeup.
Very much so. But for me, exercise does that, you know, and as it would for anyone. But many people are not already on that program. And so I encourage people, families, to find something that stimulates their sense of well-being and their enjoyment, and not to make Parkinson's the end-all focus of their life. It's just something that's assaulting a part of their life. But now we know the name of our assailant, and you build a team to fight that assailant, and you go on and you live life, and you live it very fully, and that's exactly the path that I've been on.
And you sought further information, further diagnosis, that sort of thing, even after Dr. Slevin diagnosed you initially. But then after that, you were referred back to Dr. Slevin, I understand. But then in the meantime, or as part of that whole process, you actually got involved with support groups.
I have. I was referred back to Dr. Slevin. He is one of the premier movement disorder specialists in the country, not just at the University of Kentucky, and has a reputation that supports that statement. And so it's been my privilege to not only be under his care, but now to also partner with him in a treatment plan and outreach and support to the people in the state of Kentucky that he sees as patients and that I have an opportunity to speak to as patients, but also one sharing the diagnosis. And so we have a very active support group here in Lexington, the Lexington Parkinson's Support Group, that meets monthly. And they have educational programs. They have rehabilitation information, physical therapists, speech therapists, occupational therapists, sometimes just fun events. And there are support groups all over the state. And so often Dr. Slevin and I are either, both of us are individually asked to speak to that, provide information to those individuals, and help show them a way to live beyond the diagnosis.
Got about a minute left. Dr. Slevin, could you inform people of your statement that you really didn't have that capability to empathize with patients diagnosed with Parkinson's, but that's where Janet has helped.
Absolutely. You know, first of all, we drive across the point, I'm an individual who has Parkinson's disease, not I'm a Parkinson patient. I think that separates out the idea that she was getting across. And I don't have Parkinson's disease. I don't know what they're feeling. I can empathize, or I can sympathize maybe,
right,
but I can't really empathize because I don't have it. And then Janet does, and I think patients immediately sense that, and that allows a repartee between them that I can't have as a physician.
Just a few seconds. If people want to find out more about Parkinson's and how they can get involved in the support group, that sort of thing, is it for people other than just patients, for families as well?
Patients and families, and the caregivers will meet at the same time that the individuals with Parkinson's are meeting.
Good enough. Go ahead.
And if they want to call me, my telephone number at the university is 859-218-5076, or they can email me and I can get them all the information that they need about the Lexington Support Group and support groups in other counties throughout the state. And my email address is janet.green, spelled G-R-E-E-N-E, at uky.edu.
Good enough. Well, we appreciate the opportunity to speak with Janet Green and also Dr. John Slevin, neurologist at UK. And they've been our guests today on Focus, a public affairs program at the Christian Broadcasting System.